had some letters of recommendation from stations where I'd worked and transcripts of my college courses in broadcasting, and they said, oh, okay, you're a radio television production specialist. So I wound up going to Shepherd Air Force Base. We were making videos to allow people to learn how to launch missiles and repair aircraft engines and so forth. Then I went to the island of Crete for a year and a half. Glorious, glorious duty. But after a year and a half, I was due to come back to the United States. Well, I'd seen a bit of Europe and the Near East, and I've decided that I'd like to see a little bit of the Far East, so I put in for Japan. They said, oh, Japan's a three-year tour, and when you leave Greece, you'll only have a year left. So they said, well, it was either Vietnam or Korea. Well, I heard a bit about Korea, but wasn't interested in it. So I put in for Vietnam, and I spent a year in Vietnam. No, I was not thrown out. I didn't have a sergeant major who tried to kill me. And anybody who's been in the military will tell you there was a lot in that movie that if I'd really done what Robin did, I'd be still in Leavenworth instead of Roanoke. Yeah. A lot of outright imagination and certainly some exaggeration.
What year were you in Vietnam?
I was there 65, 66.
Okay. So there was obviously a great deal going on. It had to have been, just the surroundings had to have been an incredible experience, just really kind of being immersed in what was going on at the time.
Well, I was there fairly early on, because I started the Good Morning Vietnam thing, and it continued thereafter. But when I put my paperwork in, shortly thereafter, there was the Gulf of Tonkin incident, and Lyndon Johnson began his escalation of the war. And in a year's time, I watched Saigon go from a sleepy little French colonial town into a nightmare with a massive influx of equipment and money, and it was just terrible.
You went to Vietnam, and you were hosting this morning show. Did you do it straight up, or how much of you is portrayed, or is it, or because obviously you ended up coming out of there with a story you wanted to tell and ended up writing up the story. So what was that experience like for you, and how close was it, if at all, to the character portrayed by Robin Williams?
Well, it was never intended to be an accurate point-by-point biography. It was intended to be a piece of entertainment, and it certainly was that. He was nominated for an Academy Award. But the way it happened, in 1979, MASH was number one in the ratings. WKRP in Cincinnati was popular. And I figured if you put them together, you had Armed Forces Radio. So I did a treatment for a TV sitcom I called Good Morning Vietnam. Well, in 1979, I guess it was too close in time, nobody believed you could do a comedy about Vietnam. They'd say, well, it's war. There's nothing funny about war. Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Did you ever hear of McHale's Navy? Did you ever hear of Hogan's Heroes? Have you ever heard of MASH? Oh, yeah, well, that was World War II in Korea. And your point is, well, this is Vietnam. Yes. Well, it's war. There's nothing funny about war. So a couple of years later, still thinking in terms of TV, I redid it for a movie of the week as an idea. And this time, a friend's agent got it into Robin Williams' hands. He read it and said, oh, disc jockey, chance to do all my comic shtick. Let's do it. Only let's do it as a real movie. So he and his manager, a guy by the name of Larry Bresner, he and his manager bought a option on it, and every year they'd renew the option. And finally, about 3 or 4 years later, they called me up one day and said, well, we've got to start production, but we've decided to throw away the original and start all over again. So I went out to California and told them everything I could remember happening in Vietnam. They'd say things like, oh, that's a great incident. We'll have to use that in the movie. Of course, we'll have to change it totally. Mm-hmm. And it went through 5 versions. And then when Robin got a hold of it, things totally were different. What they did was essentially just sit him down in a mock-up of a radio studio and go, okay, kid, go. Then 5 minutes or 10 minutes later, they'd stop the cameras, develop the film, pull out all the really good stuff, and use it. Mm-hmm. So that's how it came about. But it was never intended as an accurate point-by-point biography. It was intended as a piece of entertainment.
So like a lot of authors, you basically had this life experience and thought, okay, this is a good jumping-off point to tell a story.
Yes, but the story didn't really have that much to do with me personally. But I take a lot of pride in the fact that the film began to show Americans in Vietnam as they really were, instead of murderers and rapists and dope addicts and baby killers and psychotics. Mm-hmm. And I think that was important, that that story be told.
Yeah. Were there elements of the film that maybe you personally didn't experience, but that you recognized as, okay, I could see that as happening, or I saw that happen?
Yeah. There were a number of incidents that happened in the movie that were based on things that happened to me. The one that comes to mind first off was the bombing at the Mekong restaurant. It was a boat that was set up on the Saigon River, a dock there, and they set up tables and chairs on the deck, and it was a nice restaurant, and the food was halfway decent, and there may be a nice breeze coming in off the river. So we'd go down there occasionally for dinner. One night, we had left, there were four of us, and we had eaten dinner, left the boat, and were hanging around in the area when the Viet Cong set off what they call a Claymore mine, which sends out a spray of shrapnel. The shrapnel raked the side of the boat and caused a lot of damage, and also caused a lot of panic, and people were trying desperately to get on shore when they set off another charge aimed directly at the gangplank, and that's the one that did the real damage. And that came in the movie as the bombing at Jimmy Roy's restaurant.
I understand that you actually did not have an opportunity to meet Robin personally until the conclusion of the shooting of the film. Is that correct?
That's correct. The director, Barry Levinson, decided that he was afraid Robin would subconsciously do an imitation of me if we met, and that would change his characterization in mid-shooting. So he kept us very carefully and deliberately kept us apart. I was never even allowed near the set or allowed to know anything about what was going on. So when the premiere happened in New York, Robin and I were introduced to each other. We shook hands, and he said, "Well, I'm glad to finally meet you." And I said, "Well, I'm glad to finally meet me, too." And we got along fine after that. Mm-hmm. When he turned 40, in 1991, he turned 40. His wife at the time, Marcia, invited 200 or 300 of his very, very closest friends out to his place in California, north of San Francisco. There were hot and cold running movie stars all over the place. Probably the most interesting character was Robin's mother, who was in her 70s. She had to leave early because she had a hot date that night.
Is there a layer upon your name, Adrian Cronauer, and who you really are, and the Adrian Cronauer that he portrayed that you have had to deal with since this film?
Oh, sure. A lot of times people will sometimes think that they're getting Robin Williams instead of Adrian Cronauer, and there is a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Do they come up, please say good morning, Vietnam?
Well, I have to tell you first as a setup, if you do a morning shift, you are, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, you are going to oversleep. And when that happens, you come tearing into the station at the very last minute. You're staggering around half asleep, half dressed. You don't have any records pulled. You don't know where your headphones are. And as you walk through the door to the studio, you hear the newsman saying, "That's the latest from the Armed Forces Radio Newsroom. Next news in 1 hour." Now you've got to do something. So as you turn on the microphone and try and find your headphones and get some records queued up or some tapes set, you go, Good morning, Vietnam. That's the way it really was done.
And that was just to buy you some time to drop that needle on the record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what it was.